Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's all Bills all day. Buffalo Bills Football Friday, exclusively on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Brought to you by Celino Law. Car crash? Call Celino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Love Fridays. It's a Friday. Here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is a Buffalo Football Friday. It's brought to you by Celino Law. Car crash, call Celino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, start your game day the Crosby's way. Sal Capaccio here with you today on a Buffalo Football Friday where the Bills are on a two-game winning streak and look to extend it to three in Seattle at 4.05 p.m. I think it's kind of weird they're playing at 4:05 and not 4:25. I'm not complaining. You get back a little bit. You know, every minute matters when you're flying back from the West Coast late at night, right? Not complaining about it, but here's why I say that. Let me look at the map. I stand corrected here, but it's still, I guess, most of the country. I assumed that it would be going to most of the country because you have the number one Fox announcing team, Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady. But actually, now that I look at the map of which games are going where, obviously you'll get that here in Buffalo and throughout the Northeast, all the way over to Indy and Cincy, Louisville, down in Kentucky. Like, you're going to get it throughout the Midwest and then, of course, on the West. In fact, all the way down close to LA. San Francisco is going to get it, Seattle, of course. But maybe I would think a little bit, looks like. Actually, all of Texas. So I think more of the country is going to get this game than any other game, but it's very close between that and Green Bay, Jacksonville. And that is Kenny Albert and Jonathan Vilma. Of course, we'll have the game here for you on WGR Sports Radio 550 and along the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. 4.05 p.m. start. But I thought that was kind of weird that they played at 4.05 because generally when you have a big, you know, doubleheader second start time to the whole country, it's the 4:25 games. The 4:25 games, we're going to get into the schedule later, are Carolina at Denver, Kansas City at the Raiders, Chiefs at Raiders, and the Bears at Commanders. Those are all your 4:25 games. Oh, and then there's another 4:05 game, Saints Chargers. So where's that other game I was talking about? The Packers one. Hold on. Let me get this again here. Green Bay at Jacksonville is, where is that? Green Bay, that's a 1 o'clock start. So why is this? Oh, Fox Single, I get it. Okay. I'm looking at the map here. So I read this map wrong. So I guess I didn't realize this. So if you get only one game, that's why. So not at the same time those games are being played. But that being said, that means still the Bills game is still going to most of the country, and it's a 4:05 p.m. start, not 4:25, which I think is kind of odd, but that's okay. 4:05 p.m., ready to rock and roll. Tom Brady's first game announcing a Bills game. Not sure if you've listened to him or not. I think he's gotten better in the short games that I've listened to a little bit. He still is very general in his analysis. He doesn't kind of get too much into the weeds like some of the other announcers, but I do think he's getting better as it's gone on. Turn down your TV, turn up your radio. Chris Brown, Eric Wood, I'll be down on the sidelines. Bills at Seahawks. Now, this is an opponent that we're not super familiar with as far as playing them often, right? We know that. The Bills just don't play the Seahawks very much. It's pretty much every 4 years. That can change based on the new rotation of the 17th game, like every other year or so, if you finish in the same spot as them, you would play them because of the one extra game that's included. But either way, it's still only a, you know, I guess 25% chance of that happening. So every 4 years, you play the Seattle Seahawks. And the last time the Bills played, I mean, it's been some wacky stuff, to be quite honest with you. The last time the Bills played the Seahawks was in 2020. And there were no fans because it was COVID. And the Bills just went out and pretty much like demolished the Seahawks that day. That was, let me go to the actual score here. Josh Allen threw for over 400 yards. That was a November game, which was nice. It was nice and shiny and bright. I remember that game. 44-34, Bills win that game. I think, did Seattle start to come back a little bit? So let's see. Bills had a 24-7 lead. Then it got to 27-20 going into the fourth quarter. And then the Bills pulled away again. Josh Allen in that game, that was his real breakout year. Threw for 415, three touchdowns. He was also Josh Allen was sacked seven times in that game, by the way. That's got to be, I don't know if he's been sacked seven times ever in his career other than that. That's crazy. It was a wild game. Russell Wilson was the quarterback for the Seahawks. He was sacked five times. He also threw two interceptions and threw for 390 and two TDs. It was a wild game back and forth, you know, from an aerial standpoint. But the score-wise, Bills kind of took control. Seahawks climbed back a little bit. And then the Bills wound up winning the game. Okay. Then you got to go back to 2016. Now, this is why I brought this up. Who here, raise your hand as you're driving. Please keep your hand on the wheel in some capacity. As you're listening on your app or whatever. Raise your hand if you remember the debacle at the end of the first half of the 2016 Buffalo Bills at Seattle Seahawks Monday night game on November 7, 2016. By the way, very interesting. Every time these two teams play, it seems like it's right around the same time. I mean, this year it's October 27th. 2016, it was November 7th. 2020, it was November 8th. It's always right around the same time. Raise your hand if you remember the debacle at the end of that game. I'll tell you what happened. It's still, because the reason I bring it up, it's been on my mind all week. because I was there. It was my third year on the sidelines as the Radio Network sideline reporter. It was Rex Ryan and the Bills, and they had a two-game losing streak. And they had, what was their record? They had lost two. They had won four. Then they lost two. So they were 4-4, going to Seattle. They had a bye week the next week. And I remember Rex saying, he just was telling the team, empty the tank, empty the tank, empty the tank. And they did. And I think the Bills played a really good game that day. Way better than a lot of people anticipated against a good Seahawks team. Tyrod Taylor was the quarterback. Came down to the final drive, last play of the game. The Bills kind of got screwed on a late play, because I've been thinking about this because of last night too, where one of their receivers, Walt Powell, got drilled by Richard Sherman in the end zone. Nothing was called. There's a lot of controversy about that. But Tyrod Taylor threw for 289, a touchdown and an interception in this game. Had a nice day, not overwhelming. And the game was marred by a really controversial moment before halftime. I want to get into that and remember that for a second because it kind of plays into like last night watching what happened in the Thursday night game. But let me set up today for you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday. Of course, every Friday we have Bills head coach Sean McDermott. We are anticipating him at 11 a.m. today. Now, I always say this. You never know. He could call a little bit earlier. He could call a little bit later. So just be ready. Keep your head and ears and everything else on a swivel, as I always say. Sean McDermott at 11 a.m. today. But because we're getting Sean McDermott at 11 a.m. today, that gave me some room to get Paul Peck on at 10:30. Paul, as you know, is the voice of the UB Bulls, football and basketball. And UB has a game tomorrow, so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about their season so far. But a big reason I'm getting Paul on is, it's pretty cool, actually. I don't know if people, how many of you remember, it wasn't too long ago, there was a bowling game on TV called Beat the Champ. And it was really popular. And it went away. It's coming back. And we're going to talk about Beat the Champ coming back. with Paul Peck and UB football. It's going to be really cool. So Paul joins me at 10:30, Sean McDermott at 11, and then Patrick Hammer on Seattle weather for game day at 11:30. And, of course, your weather here in Buffalo, which looks to be really good, while it does not look to be really good in Seattle. He texted me last night. Pat did. And he's like, hey, I'm good to go for tomorrow. It's not just the rain. Let me tell you what's going on. I'm like, oh, my God, here we go. Here we go. I mean, we've had some good weather, though, lately, so I can't complain too much. But when you go to Seattle, November, late October, you know that there's a chance that it's going to be rainy, cooler, and that's going to be the case. But Pat's going to give us the full rundown at 11:30. So end of the half, 2016. Raise your hand if you remember. If you can call, by the way. We had open phone lines right now. Whatever's on your mind on the Bills and a Buffalo football Friday, we'll just kind of open it up for you till 10:30. 803-0550. Got a question, comment, concern, something about Seattle? Remember this game in 2016? How about past Seahawks games? I told you, wild things have happened. Do you remember the game? This was the game where didn't they go into Seattle in 2000? It was right. Wade Phillips said basically they had no chance to make the playoffs when they actually did. And that really ruffled a lot of people wrong. And then they wound up losing the game. It was like, almost like they gave up like and said, oh, we can't win and we're not going to make the playoffs. And they were actually very alive for the playoffs. It was very weird. This is like late 90s, early 2000s, actually. I remember that one, too. That was Kingdom. So end of the first half, 2016. Dan Carpenter is the Bills kicker. Let me get to the play-by-play. I just went back. You can watch this on YouTube. It's going to be frustrating to you. It was frustrating to me, and it's been sticking out to me all week. And honestly, it's like I know that it's completely different teams, completely different coaching staffs, and 8 years later, eight freaking years later, and I'm like, they got robbed. The Bills got robbed in this game, and they need to go to Seattle and make up for it because it was so, so frustrating. With 11 seconds left, the Bills are at midfield in this game, and they're down, I think it was at the time, they were down, here we go, 11 points. Really nice pass, Tyrod Taylor to Robert Woods for 15 yards. Gets to the 35, and the Bills call timeout. There's 3 seconds left, and then complete madness ensued. Dan Carpenter comes on for a 53-yard field goal. Okay? What happened, though, was Richard Sherman jumped the snap on purpose. He said it after the game. He jumped it on purpose to not let the kick get off. While he does that, he leans into Carpenter's leg as Carpenter's kicking the ball. The play is blown dead as Sherman is running into the kicker. It's blown dead because he's completely offsides. He's unabated to the kicker. Carpenter gets hurt. He's offsides. Carpenter gets hurt. They call the offsides. Okay, we're going to move it up 5 yards. But here's what happened. Because he got hurt on the play where he was completely roughed and ran into and drilled illegally by Richard Sherman, the trainers had to come on the field. And because the trainers came on the field, they charged the Bills with a fourth timeout. Okay. That's fine, except for one thing. Because of that, and they had no timeouts left, he had to leave the field for one play, Dan Carpenter. He got drilled. It was unnecessary roughness. The trainers come out to check on him, but, oh, yeah, sorry. Because even though Richard Sherman did that, he has to leave the field for one play. Even though the clock is stopped, it doesn't matter. So the Bills are like, what do we do? What do we do? They run Jonathan Williams, a running back, onto the field to take a snap and spike the ball. Okay. We'll just get him out for one play. We can do that. It's first down anyway. Smart play, actually, by the Bills. Smart play by Rex Ryan and his coaching staff. They spike the ball. Carpenter goes back out to kick the field goal. Now it's actually only going to be it was a 53-yarder. Now it's a 48-yarder. Okay. The kick is good. All right, everything's all good. No, wait. It's not. Why? The Bills are called for delay of game. Go back and watch. On the delay of game, the referee, the line judge, umpire, I guess it is, would be, was standing over the ball holding it not to let the play start. And the rule actually states once he releases that, that's when the play clock's supposed to start. They never reset the play clock. So the Bills were charged for a penalty for delay of game after he made the field goal. And it should have been a delay of game. So they had to move it back 5 yards. Guess what happened? He missed. The Bills go to halftime down by 11. And it was super important because you get to the end of the game and at that point, the Bills are down. What's the score? 31-25. It's a six-point game. If the Bills score a touchdown, they win. They would have just needed a field goal to tie it, send it to overtime, but they had to go for a touchdown. And they get down to the Seattle 8-yard line. Tyrod gets sacked. Next play, incomplete to Robert Woods. Game over. Ah, frustrating. Anyway, I had to bring that up. Because last night, as you all watched, I'm sure, have heard about, talked about, whatever, the officials botched it last night. Now, they missed a call. It happens. I am generally one to say, officials are human, man. They're not going to be perfect every call. And I don't want to see plays reviewed all the time. I don't want to see penalties reviewed all the time. There's holding all the time. Are we really going to review every play for holding, pass interference? Just, you got to live with bad calls. It just happens in sports. But last night was just so egregious. The face mask in the end zone, there's two officials standing right there. And their explanation was they didn't get a good look. If you look, they're standing right there and looking at it. I can at least respect one part of this from the official's point of view, which was, hey, I didn't see if they actually grabbed the face mask from my view. But man, how do you miss that when you're so close and there are two people standing right there? It is it's a really good example of why, if you're on the side of having those types of things reviewed, why that should happen. Because inside 2 minutes, right? I mean, here's what happened. It was an 8-point game. And I don't know. I don't think the Vikings go down and score and get a 2-point conversion. They might. They had to go 97 yards in a minute and a half. They could do that. I mean, they have Justin Jefferson, right? He had like a 97-yard touchdown just a few weeks ago, heck. So it could happen. But I mean, it still would have taken a lot for that to happen. And that gave them a safety, the Rams, so they scored 2 points. It made it a 10-point game. Game over. So maybe in that situation, inside 2 minutes of a half, inside 2 minutes of the first half, 4 minutes of the second half, whatever, something. Maybe something that's clear and obvious that isn't subjective. Pass interference is subjective. Yeah, you could say it's clear that it was pass interference. It's still a subjective call. But grabbing a face mask, like you could see it. Maybe we can get to a point where that can be something reviewed. Because you got to feel for Vikings fans today going through that the same way I think you felt for the Bills and their fans and all of you out there listening in 2016 when Dan Carpenter came on the field and Richard Sherman destroyed him. And the referees botched that in many ways. And by the way, I went back and read a couple articles about that. Go look it up. Watch it from 2016 and go read the articles from postgame about it. Like New York, the officials, they admitted they screwed all that up. And it was Dean Blandino at the time. Dean Blandino was the guy on TV. And he's like, yeah, they completely screwed this up. I thought about that last night, watching this night game and thinking about the Bills in Seattle. Let's hope nothing like that happens to the Buffalo Bills this weekend. Let's hope they just kind of put the game away like they did back in 2004 when they went to Seattle on a heater. Remember the Bills in 2004? That's the year that, unfortunately, the Steelers' backups beat the Bills and kept them out of the playoffs. But if you remember that year, the Bills started 0-4. Then they beat the Dolphins, then they lose again. And they're 1-5. Then they win two games, 3-5, and then they lose their 3-6. Then they go on a heater. Rams, Seahawks, Dolphins, Browns, Bengals, Niners just kept destroying them. And they were destroying teams. They were scoring 37, 38, 42, 37, 33, 41, and then the Steelers beat them. But that game in Seattle was one that stands out. And they went out to Seattle and they just crushed the Seahawks in that game. Drew Bledsoe, Willis McGahee, 38-9 in that game. So I'm telling you, just Seattle, just kind of you're reminded of some things that have happened over the years with these two teams, right? They also played in Toronto in 2008, and the Seahawks destroyed the Bills. I never went to one of the Toronto games. The Toronto series basically ended right before I came back to Buffalo, right around that time. I never went to, or right after that, but I never went to one of the Toronto games. And thankfully, I mean, it would have been nice just to see what it was like and experience it, but I hated the concept and the whole deal that went down, as I'm sure many of you did. But that year, 2008, the Bills, let me just look at this. This was, oh, actually, it was not 2008. I apologize. That was 2012. I said 2008. It was 2012. It was the year after. That might have been one of the last games there, but where's the Seattle game? Oh, yeah, there it is. December 16th. 50-17 in Toronto. Yikes. That was Russell Wilson, Denoris Searcy, who kind of checked out on a play when he's running for a touchdown, it looked like. Remember that one? Bills and Seahawks. Bills need to create some memories this week against a Seahawks team that can play very, very, what's the term we use in high event hockey, right? We say high event a lot of times, Josh, in hockey. They play a high event game. The Seahawks play high event games in football.
That's always a fun time, though. I mean, usually,
it can be.
Like, it's from a perspective of, like, I don't care who wins. That's always a fun time.
Yeah, they can be like big time plays or against them big time plays.
Right.
They play a high event game. The Bills can be like that. Not as much this year. They have been in the past. All right, let's open up the phone lines. Good stuff today to start the show, hopefully with you at 803-0550, Paul Peck at 1030, Sean McDermott at 11, Pat Hammer at 1130 on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday. Clover in Texas. Always good to talk to you, Clover. How are you?
Hey, Sal. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the game. I think there's been a lot of opportunities for the offense. Looking at some of the games the Seahawks play, they give up a lot of yards. Yeah. Even the game last week they won, saw they gave up a lot of yards passing and on the ground. But then I heard you this morning say that Atlanta had like the three turnovers.
Yep.
So I know you had mentioned the trade they made this week for the Tennessee linebacker. And I was wondering, how did he fare when he was playing the Bills last week? I mean, I know he had a lot of yards, but I was just wondering if you noticed him making an impact last week.
Well, obviously not as much as he would have liked or they would have liked, because the Bills won 34-10, right? That was good.
Right.
But let me take a look at his stats right here. So that would be Ernest Jones the fourth. He was on the field. Here we go. Ernest Jones, the fourth. He made five tackles, had one quarterback hurry, and a pass defense. So he was involved a little bit. But, you know, this is a guy that fits into their system. They really like. I think the reason why they made the move, I think they wanted to move Tyrell Dodson out of the middle and put him at weak side. And that allows them to do that here.
Okay. Was that where Tyrell Dodson was playing with the Bills?
It was, in place of Matt Milano last year. Yes, he played both over his career. He actually played both. If you go back his career in Buffalo, he had filled in for Tremaine Edmonds in the middle. He had filled in for Matt Milano, and then last year mostly filled in for Milano when he went down.
Okay. Well, that's going to be interesting to see both guys, Dodson and the guy you just mentioned, are familiar with the Bills. So that'll be interesting to see how.
And Clover, you know who their assistant head coach is? It's Leslie Frazier.
Yeah. I just read that yesterday.
Yeah,
well,
so.
I know I had heard that in the past, but then I was reminded of it. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to see how they do.
Thanks, Clover.
But
have
I'm
a great.
Excited. Thanks.
Yeah, have a great weekend. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Let's go to Chris in Rochester. Hi, Chris. Hold on. There you go, Chris. You're on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Good morning, Sal. Thanks for taking my call.
You got
it. I appreciate you and everything you do, Buffalo. What does the play assist? What does that do? How come that doesn't help on like that?
Well, because they can't assist on penalties. Just simple as that. Really, that's what it comes down to. They can't assist on any penalties. It's really more about catches, touchdowns, first down spots. That's really where that comes in.
But don't they assist on kind of penalties, like when punches are thrown, if a player should be kicked out of a game and. I mean, that's...
No, I don't think they do. That's stuff that comes from the field, and that's stuff that they get fined and adjudicated after the game, essentially. But that would be... If I remember correctly, I don't think they do that, but that would be a different thing. That's not an in the play scenario. And if it is, that comes from the official. So no, I don't believe they do. And people, one other question someone asked me, Chris, which is a good question. Well, it's a scoring play. All scoring plays are reviewed, so why didn't they review it? Well, you can review everything about the scoring play if it was a score, but you're not reviewing the penalty part of it.
Right. Okay. Maybe that's something that they need to add in, you know, not a coach's challenge per se for the penalties, but the booth review or the booth help assistance on penalties like that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. The league has generally, I mean, the one year they did, thanks, Chris, go to a, you know, review pass interference, but it just didn't work out. Nobody's really kind of wanted to revisit that again, I guess. But that's that. They don't review penalties from upstairs. They do review and take a look at guys, you know, hey, the neurologist says to get that guy in the tent for a head injury. That definitely happens. Let's go to Bill in Old Forge. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Sal. The only thing I remember from that Seattle game years ago was Stevie Johnson put a move on Richard Sherman that they were playing on the internet the next day. Like, I'm talking an ankle breaker move going over the middle. It's like a double basketball move. That's the only thing I remember from that game, but you can still to this day even find that on the internet.
I love it. Stevie did that to a lot of guys. Appreciate it, Bill. We'll take a timeout here. And of course, as we always do on a Friday, we'll be back in a snap. It is brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. Paul Peck on the way next on UB Football and the return of Beat the Champ.
Snap to CJ Reed, option handoff. Al J. Henderson got a big hole at the middle. There he goes at the 50, at the 40, at the 30. Can he outrace everybody at the 20, at the 10? Yes, he does! Bullseye! LJ all day for a 68-yard touchdown.
That's Paul Peck on the call right there. The UB Bulls and the Bulls Radio Network. That game tomorrow. Tomorrow, by the way, more from the Bulls right here on the Bet 1520, actually. And the Bulls are going to be taking on Ohio. They're at Ohio tomorrow. That's a 12 p.m. start. We'll have the game for you, like I said, on the Bet 1520. And that's where you can hear Paul Peck on the call. And Paul joins me right now on the West Her Hotline. Good Friday to you, buddy. How are you?
Man, I do get a little worked up. Sometimes when you hear yourself back like that, you're like, geez, I need to calm down just a little bit. But that was a big moment in the game, and it was a big touchdown, so I guess I'm okay there.
Yeah, no doubt. And listen, there's no doubt about that. I mean, it's okay to get revved up and worked up. That's what makes it exciting. That's what we love what we do, right? You get into the game, and you'd rather have that than someone just kind of, you know, calling a touchdown and sounding like they're being completely boring and not giving the fans what they want. I'm going to ask you, though, that game, 48-41. The Bulls had their chances late. What did you see from the end of that game? You know, kind of how it all played out at the end for the Bulls to kind of not close the deal.
Well, you know, I mean, again, it was surprising that the Buffalo defense that has really been the hallmark of the team this year kind of got ripped apart for 48 points like it did. But on the flip side, the offense's ability to answer and have the quarterback CJ Agbonna go over 300 yards for the first time in his career and really show that Buffalo might have a really good passing game was an excellent sign. You know, they fight their way back. The whole stadium thinks Sean Dolak makes a stop on fourth down that would have given them the ball at the 35-yard line with 48 seconds to go and a pretty good chance to either tie or win. And then a really questionable officiating spot that gives Western Michigan a first down by, and I'm not exaggerating, an inch and a half maybe, which I think it was clearly spotted wrong because the drive started at the 25, Sal, and the ball had to get to the 35, and it didn't, even though it got beyond an inch beyond the sticks. There was some mistakes made there, and it hurt. But as Pete Lembo, the head coach, said, that there were other plays that led to that. That wasn't why the Bulls lost, but it would have made for an even more exciting finish. Now Buffalo has to bounce back, forget all of that, and go tomorrow to a place they haven't won since 2008. So there's some challenges coming in, but it looks like this is a pretty solid upper half, if not right, competing for a MAC championship Buffalo team this year.
Yeah, for sure. If you look at the standings, yeah, they dropped the game, but I mean, they're still 2-1 conference play, and they still have everything they want in front of them. They're playing a really big game this week against likewise 2-1 Ohio. So what do we know about Ohio in this matchup and how the Bulls can attack them?
Well, Ohio has always been one of the best, most consistent teams in the MAC, back-to-back 10-win seasons. But in the day and age that we live in college football, they lost all their important players. Their quarterback from last year, Curtis Rourke, is the guy leading Indiana to its undefeated season. So it's not quite the same Ohio team that it's been. They're good. They're solid. Again, it's a really tough place to play, Buffalo in particular, but most of the MAC has never played particularly well there. So that, you know, that's got to end for the Bulls to figure out a way to go down there and maybe beat an Ohio team that isn't quite as high caliber as it's been in the years. And really, it's a pivotal game for the Bulls because their schedule gets technically easier with some of their opponents down the stretch. They've got the tiebreakers over two of the teams that figure to be at the top of the conference in Northern Illinois and Toledo, thanks to their wins. So these are the kind of games that you gotta win, then you gotta win the games that you're supposed to win, and then all of a sudden maybe they're in a chance to go to Detroit for the MAC championship. But you know, again, the defense has got to go back to the defense that we saw earlier in the year, not the one that gives up 48 points on a lot of yards on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm looking at the schedule going forward. If you get this game, there's some opportunity in front here for them to be right in the mix at the end of this season, Paul.
Technically, the fourth easiest schedule in the country remaining,
okay,
based on the NCAA. And there's some teams at Akron, and Kent State's winless, and Akron has struggled. And so, yeah, absolutely, there's a chance to push some wins together. That's why this one, which is never an easy team to beat and a place to win, you know, could be pivotal for where the season goes for them.
Before we move on and talk about Beat the Champ returning, basketball season is right around the corner as well. And I know Coach Halkovich, this is his second year, obviously, running the program. A lot of changes had to be made. And as you said, in this day and age of college sports, a completely new roster, basically, heading in. But I know you're gearing up for that. And what can we expect, you know, coming up here in the next, I guess, several weeks before basketball?
Yeah, I mean, there's 11 new players on the team, you know, and the core of the guys that are coming back were freshmen last year that showed some signs of being pretty good players. Ryan Sable, Anquan Boldin Jr., those guys played well in spurts as freshmen. They're sort of the leadership core group of the team now because a lot of the new players of those 11, most of them are freshmen, a lot of international players, a couple of very promising players from London, England. So it's a very much a new look team, you know, and at this point, not a lot of expectations based on the MAC preseason poll. And it's just a matter of, you know, how coach can get everybody going in the right direction. Maybe he's uncovered some gems. So it's a work in progress, right? Again, it was he inherited a team with some players that didn't fit what he wanted to do last year. Those players have moved on. He's kept the ones that he brought in that do fit what he wanted to do, and then brought all these new guys in. And it's how quickly can you mesh together? And, you know, we've seen the good coaches and the good organizations in this day and age of college athletics, it doesn't take 3 years to ramp up anymore because you don't really get 3 years anymore. Look at football, a new coach, bunch of new players have meshed together, and you know, and all the positives we're talking about under Coach Lembo means you can do it in 1 year, and I think that's where Coach is looking for the men's team at UB.
I had a text from a friend of mine who I went to Syracuse with who works in Pittsburgh ask me about Alan Green and what Pitt is getting in the new UB and their new Pitt athletic director. He worked at UB and obviously oversaw a really nice time period here, especially on the basketball side. But you got to work alongside and with and get to know Alan Green a little bit. So what are they getting over there?
Alan's terrific. Yeah. Alan was the assistant to Danny White when he came in, and then when Danny White left, Alan took over as the athletic director in that mid-2000 teens there when Bobby Hurley and Nate Oates got the basketball team going, when Lance Leipold got the football team going. Alan's a former Notre Dame baseball player, minor league baseball player. He's been an athlete. He's been a college guy. He was the AD at Auburn. Alan's just a great personality, just the kind of guy people gravitate to. He has the athletic mindset. He's worked at schools like UB, schools like Notre Dame, AD at Auburn. So he gets it. Now, all that said, every AD that gets hired this time of year has to figure out where the NCAA is going, and they don't even know where they're going. So it's a constantly evolving process. But if nothing else, they're getting a great guy and a terrific leader in Alan Green.
He played in the Yankees organization. World Series starts tonight. Are you a Yankees fan?
No, not at all.
What are you, Red Sox?
I'm a Mets fan.
Mets? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
Yep. That was passed down from my dad, who was a Brooklyn Dodgers fan.
Okay.
And when the Brooklyn, you know, the evolution of baseball in New York is you either rooted for the Yankees,
yeah,
or back in the day you rooted for the Dodgers or the Giants. When they went to California, you absolutely never inherited the Yankees as your team. Then the Mets come in, and that's kind of where I got my love for the Mets. So I find it very hard to. I'm intrigued by the Yankees. They're fun to watch, but you know, there were plenty of days in my youth sitting with my buddies around the lunch table arguing because I wasn't a Yankee fan and they were in the 70s and they had an awful lot to hold over my head. So I just can't do it, Sal. I can't bring myself to root for them.
That's okay. I actually, there's a really great documentary, the 30 for 30, called The Uncivil War, about the Yankees and Dodgers rivalry that goes back to then. It's amazing, the 50s. And
I can't believe this is the first time they're playing in the World Series since like 77, right?
That's incredible.
Blew me away when I heard that.
I know. It's going to be fun. That starts tonight. But also, starting this weekend, the return of a very, very popular radio show. You know, in Buffalo, we love our football, our hockey, our chicken wings, and our bowling. Maybe not even in that order, Paul, but here we go. Beat the Champ is coming back. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so obviously Beat the Champ was on for about 5 years, 2016 to 2020. Then we stopped it during the pandemic. And credit to the guys who run the bowling centers in Western New York, the Bowling Proprietors Association of Western New York. They wanted to bring this show back. They understand people liked it. People appreciate it. It's a popular sport. It helps them grow their sport. So we figured out a way to get it back, and it's going to be on MSG now. And it won't look anything like the show from before. We've got an executive producer, Joe Chacone, who's a Buffalo guy, a former Pro Bowler, and a current TV production guy. That's what he does as his profession. He works on the Fox and ESPN bowling broadcasts, and he is bringing that same look, the same graphics, the same set, the big digital scoreboards are coming back. So the show's going to debut tomorrow night on MSG. 9:30 is the airtime tomorrow night on MSG. They'll rerun it Sunday night at 8:30 and then again at midnight. And it's just the quintessential Buffalo show, Sal. It really is. It's a bunch of guys bowling, right? And we had guys that are plant workers and machinists and exterminators and delivery guys. Like these are who are on the show. Where else can you find your neighbor, your buddy, your friend, your uncle? You're like, hey, there he is on TV. He's bowling. And the competition is great because the sport is so good in this town. And it's just a fun show. And it's kind of why I got involved in it years ago. A little bit of the keep the tradition of Chuck Healy and Van Miller, who did this show in the 70s and the 80s. I get to work with an awesome bowling Hall of Famer in Sue Novoisky, and she's so good, and she knows her stuff, and she's great at TV, and we just have fun showcasing a sport that doesn't get a lot of attention. And I've had more people, and I hope more people will continue to just say, hey, I'm flipping around and I saw that and I watched it. I don't even like bowling, but it's such a cool show and it's so Buffalo and it's so different that people watch it. I mean, it's just there's not a lot of local sports production going on in Buffalo, you know, outside of some high school football here and there. So I think we've got a little niche of just something different and cool.
Well, when you talk about how the show was on a few years ago, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, people might be listening going, wait, I remember that show from a long time ago, right? I'm reading this press release. It says 1959 through 89, Chuck Healy and Van Miller. I mean, amazing.
Yeah, I didn't even know it went back that long. I always remember it from the 70s. But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, think of those two guys, right? You know,
yeah.
When I got here to start to work with Van at Channel 4, the tail end of the 80s, the show was just kind of coming to an end. But I remember it, and I remember Van telling me how important it was. And we would cover some bowling tournaments throughout the course of the year. And that kind of sounds strange in the sports world of professional sports and everything else going on. But I always remember Van saying, hey, in this town, this is big. This means something. So it's got a great tradition. People remember watching it as kids. Some of the names from back in those shows are still names that people remember. And like I said, it's just the ultimate Buffalo show. It's just a bunch of Buffalo guys who bowl 3-4 nights a week around town in their leagues. Compete, you qualify to make the show, and then if you keep winning, you get to stay on the show, and that's what's pretty cool about it.
All right, and then one more time, tell everybody where they can watch, when they can watch.
So it's Beat the Champ. It'll be on MSG this time, which is a little different place than we were on the last time, but it'll be right on MSG, which is, you know, where the Sabres games are, of course, and a lot of good sports there. It's going to debut tomorrow night, Saturday night at 9:30. and then it'll rerun again on Sundays at 8:30. And moving forward, it should be sort of in that time frame, depending on Sabres games and things like that. But and again, it looks great. We've got great graphics and great scoreboards and stuff. It looks no different than any network show you might, any network bowling show you might happen to catch on any of the other networks. So I'm really happy with it. I'm really proud of it. And, you know, check it out. Again, it's just whether you're a bowler or not, it's just kind of a fun show to watch, and we try to have some fun with it as well.
Thanks for letting us know about it. Safe travels to Ohio. Have a great call tomorrow.
Thank you, Sal. Appreciate the time very
much. All right,
much.
You got it. That is Paul Peck on the Wester Hotline. Great stuff there. Beat the champ. That's pretty cool that that's coming back. I was a bowler in high school. I wasn't a great bowler, but I was a bowler. I was like the only football player on the bowling team in my high school. I actually was on the bowling team. And I think my high game was like 240 something like that. But that's, you know, it's pretty good, right? Pretty good. But I didn't reach that very often. I was just a guy, like, I was there. I liked having fun. I bowled a little bit, yeah.
You a Wii bowling guy?
I have Wii bowled. Yes, I have.
That's,
I haven't done it
in
a long
time. That's where I'm good. That's where I'm good.
I got to see if there's one for that. I told you I do a VR workout. I do the Les Mills body combat workout. That's what I do in the morning.
That'd be cool, amazing. On VR.
Yeah, I know. I got to see. That's a good thing. Maybe I can do that. But anyway, Beat the Champ coming back this weekend. UB Bulls in action tomorrow against Ohio on the Bet 1520. We'll take a timeout here. We'll come back. We'll talk for a minute, then we'll take another break and get you ready for Sean McDermott with a very important injury update on the Buffalo Bills this weekend as they take on the Seattle Seahawks. That comes your way at the top of the hour. Okay, got a couple things coming over right now that I'm looking at. NFL news. Number one, the Steelers have apparently signed Andy Isabella to their practice squad. Now, I wonder, think about this for a second. There was a lot of stuff going on, rumors, talk about maybe Cooper Kupp being traded, and the Steelers were a team that was very much talked about being in that mix. The Rams went out yesterday. They won. After the game, Sean McVay's like, yeah, there's really nothing to those reports. Cooper Kupp is here. It's glad to have him, and I expect it to stay that way. I wonder if the Steelers are now like, okay, we're not getting Cooper Kupp, so now let's see who's out there we can bring in and just kind of help out our receiving core on the back end. I'm not telling you Andy Isabella's Cooper Kupp. What I'm saying is that screams to me like maybe, they're adding someone else because they couldn't get the guy they wanted, so they have to figure other things out and see where it goes. Maybe. We'll see. Do the Rams really want to trade Cooper Kupp? I mean, at this point, they shouldn't. They're back in the mix here in the NFC West. That's why this game with the Seahawks this weekend against the Bills is very important to them as well. That division is very tight right now. Here's the other thing. This just coming over a few minutes ago, or about an hour ago, I guess. Apparently, season ticket holders of the Miami Dolphins have been informed that the Dolphins will be hosting an international game next year. The location is not known yet. Madrid, Spain has been thought of as where they'll be. Because I do know the NFL is going to play in Madrid next year. But it doesn't have to be. It could be London. They've played in London before. But apparently the Dolphins are going to host an international game next year.
Bills, Dolphins in Spain. Let's go.
I mean, I would not like that. That's a division
game. Oh, that's fair.
In Miami. Well, it'd be good to get it out of Miami because it's a division game. It hurts them. But that's a great place. Bills fans love to go to Miami, and they take over the stadium. So it's okay. I mean, you want to do that.
We'll just go take over Spain.
Yeah, that's right. You can do that too. I read yesterday a lot of Bills fans at the airport going to Seattle this weekend. So expect a lot of Bills Mafia. And of course, you know, I go on these radio shows in these other cities all the time when the Bills are playing, and they always ask me, do we need to watch our tables? People going to be breaking tables when they come here? It's like, you know, like, no, I think you're okay, but you never know, right? I mean, you see them go through the airport sometimes. They're getting checked in, so.
Stock up on your blue cheese.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we are going to take a timeout here because Sean McDermott is scheduled to join us at the top of the hour. The Buffalo Bills head coach will give us a very important injury update. Obviously, a lot of eyes on Terrell Bernard and whether or not he'll be available for Sunday against the Seattle Seahawks. We'll talk with him about that and look ahead to the Seahawks game on Sunday here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. Josh Schmidt producing. Good to be with you. Sean McDermott up next here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday. Brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. We are awaiting Bills head coach Sean McDermott momentarily. We will ask him, of course, about injuries. A lot of eyes on Terrell Bernard and whether or not he'll be available to play this weekend. Terrell has been on the injury report this week. A, with the ankle injury and the pectoral injury he suffered a few weeks ago that he's still getting maintenance on in some capacity. Obviously, that's why he's listed there, but mainly the ankle from last week. But he's also been an excused absence from practice. So some clarity from Sean McDermott coming up on today's practice and what that looks like for this weekend in Seattle. Also, Curtis Samuel has yet to practice this week due to a pectoral injury himself. So we'll get all that. And then, of course, look ahead to the Seattle Seahawks. Sabres play tomorrow. It's an afternoon game. I sense a little bit of excitement and optimism in Sabres fans right now after the way they've played a little bit since coming back from Europe. Yeah, I know. They lost that first game coming back, but they played really well against the LA Kings, the opener. They should have been rewarded that game. They weren't. And then they get the reward against the Florida Panthers. But really, since they came back from Europe, it hasn't been bad. You know what I mean? There's been times. I think really they've played pretty good hockey mostly. Not every game, not every minute, no doubt. I should say it that way. But let's look here. Let's where are the standings? I was looking at the standings this morning. You know, the Atlantic Division is kind of really tight, and I don't know if anybody's going to pull away. That's why these next couple games are very, very important for the Sabres. They play the Red Wings, and they play the Panthers. Every point matters right now. You cannot drop like you have the last several years into November, getting into Thanksgiving, and like, it's kind of over. What do you do? I mean, like, basically, Kyle Okposo said that last year if he was traded. Like, yeah, we kind of knew everything was over in November. Like, what are you playing for? You can't get there. So, you know, after the two losses, they've gone 3-2-1. And, of course, one was a brutal loss in Pittsburgh where they should have closed that one out. So that was a time where they didn't play well enough. But tomorrow, 1 o'clock p.m. start, against the Detroit Red Wings. Detroit, speaking of like teams playing, what did we say, high event earlier? Yeah, Detroit has a high event against them, yet they're winning. I saw a tweet, so I want to credit, I think it was Mike Harrington I saw it from the Buffalo News, who covers the Sabres, obviously. Let me just give you his tweet here. This was incredible when I looked at it. Red Wings' last three games, check this out. They've won their last three. 5-2, 1-0, and 5-3. They've won by 3 goals, 2 goals, and 1 goal. And yet they've been outshot, respectively, in these games, get this, 39-22, 29-11, and 41-19. They outshot 41-19 against the Devils last night, and they win 5-3. They scored 5 goals on 19 shots, but yet they give up only 3 goals on 41 shots. That's some really good goaltending, and that is an astronomical shooting percentage. that cannot be sustainable, right? I don't think so, Josh. I look at him like, that can't continue to happen.
No, I mean, that's like statistically impossible. But just those numbers alone, you want to talk high event. That's probably as close as you can get to the highest high event hockey you can see. I mean,
against them for sure. I mean,
right.
But they're playing low event. They're right. But you're right. You're 100%. I get what you're saying. And then there's the Islanders. you're not gonna have the high event against them, right? 1-0 game, a total of 40 shots in the game.
They've played the same style of hockey for like 40 years. It's crazy.
No doubt. The Devils used to play that style of hockey, right? They're not anymore. The Devils are good. They're young. They're high flying. They have a new coach as well in Sheldon Keefe, and we saw them firsthand, obviously, in those games in Europe. So anyway, real big weekend coming up for the Sabres, obviously, coming up here against the Detroit Red Wings. Then after that, coming back and they're playing against the Florida Panthers on this homestand. We'll get to Sean McDermott, the Buffalo Bills head coach, right now on the Western Hotline.
Coach Sean McDermott's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Kaleida Health, the official healthcare provider of the Buffalo Bills. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com.
And Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott joins me right now on the Western Hotline. Good Friday morning to you, Coach. Glad to talk to you again.
Well, it's good to be with you again, Sal.
All right, Coach, let's start off with the injury report. We'll get to that right away. And, of course, this is the Barnes Firm injury report brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. You've had a lot of guys listed, a couple DMPs, including Terrell Bernard, who's missed for a couple different reasons this week. So if you can give us, you know, what you have the latest there.
Yeah, we'll rule out Terrell Bernard. He'll be out for the game, as will Dwayne Carter and then Curtis Samuel as well.
Okay, Coach, and as far as today is concerned, practicing, do you anticipate everybody being available to practice today and anything on that front besides those guys?
Outside of those three, everyone will practice in some capacity today.
Okay. Coach, on injuries, I know long-term, and I know you know, we see Matt Milano on the sidelines. I get asked a lot about his rehab. Just from your perspective, you see Matt around the building. How's everything going with Matt when you see him there and being around the team and, you know, just kind of what it's been looking like to have him around?
Yeah, he's been great to have around. He really has. You know, watching him go through his situation last year, very impressed by that and his process day to day. Same thing this year, unfortunately, in some ways, right? But his process is top shelf. His leadership has grown even through last year and then this year again. His influence, he's trying to do the best that he can and you know, while not being out there. So we're hoping to get him back. It's just a matter of when at this point.
Coach, you've had some slow starts, including last week. I know you've been asked about it a little bit, but you know, what can you do to kind of figure it out? You know, because there's obviously play better early in the game, execution, but is there anything you can kind of do with the process? Is that something you think about? Is that something you look at with your staff, your analytics staff, anything, whether it's during the week, pregame, or the start of the game?
We definitely do. You know, we kind of scour it the best we can in all those areas that you mentioned and beyond. And, you know, so listen, like I've said before, give some credit to the opponent. They're out there playing as well and want to get off to a good start also. So, but certainly some things we can work on there.
Last week, Amari Cooper, I mean, right away makes an impact for your team, has a nice game, catches that touchdown pass. Josh Allen goes back to him after things didn't go so much his way on that first drive. What did it mean for you guys to have Amari as part of your team and making an impact right away like that?
Yeah, he makes us better. He does. And he's a good football player. He'll add to our mix and our balance offensively as well across the board.
And then, obviously, you know, he played, what, 19 snaps last week, 35%. As this goes along and people anticipate him playing more, you've gotten to know him a little bit. You know, just tell us a little bit about him kind of learning the playbook and what we learned last week, staying late, and the process of making sure that everything's kind of on track for him to kind of ramp up a little bit more each week.
No, he's a pro, and usually when you make it this far in one's career, you're doing something right, and that goes back to the process as you mentioned, and willingness to put in more time, and I think that work ethic is a part of the reason why he's been in the league and been as successful as he's been over the years, and so you know, that's going to continue as we move forward here, and you know, we're anxious to see. And excited to see where that leads us this week and on into the future weeks here.
Keon Coleman had his first 100-yard game as a pro last week, and then he was named AFC Offensive Rookie of the Week. What did you see from the rookie last week in his game?
Well, he trusted the process. Again, not to use that word, overuse that word or phrase, but, you know, didn't have as much of the touches early in the game, but he stuck with it, which is important from a mindset standpoint. And a young player, that's hard to do when you're used to being the guy. And then he really came through for us in the fourth quarter there in particular.
And then on the defensive side, one guy I want to ask you about is Greg Rousseau. He had six quarterback hits last week, and they didn't translate to sacks. He did have the one, right? But, you know, you're getting numbers there. You're affecting the quarterback. They were running a lot of quick game, right? They were just getting the ball out of hands quickly. As a defensive coach yourself, a guy who's been there, is it tough to preach to stay patient, don't overdo it when you know you're impacting the play, but maybe the sacks aren't there because you're still impacting the quarterback in some way?
It is, and you know, perseverance is a series of short windows, if you will, and that's what you really have to do when you're rushing the quarterback. It's one play after another. Sometimes you reap the benefits of your work and technique, and sometimes you don't. But you got to stay with it through the course of the game, and the same way through the course of a season.
All right, Coach, let's talk about your opponent this week, the Seattle Seahawks. You have not been to Seattle as a head coach yet of the Buffalo Bills. I did look. The last time you were there was the defensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers back in 2016. Tell us a little bit about the environment and the challenges playing in Seattle can pose.
Well, it's a tough environment, just like it is here for opponents when they come to Buffalo. And so that's an added part of the challenge as we go out there against a good football team and a team that's well coached as well. And this will be a challenge for us. It's one that we're looking forward to. And again, they've got a good football team.
Geno Smith leads the league in passing yards. What do you see from the veteran quarterback who's really resurrected his career?
Wow, he has. You know, it's been some years since we've faced him, a ton of respect for his game and the way he's developed his game over the years, in particular of late. You know, looks very comfortable in their system and does a great job. I think they're the number one ranked passing offense in the league.
And then, of course, on the other side of the ball, Coach Mike McDonald, a fantastic young defensive coach. I know from you coaching on that side of the ball how much respect you must have for him from what he's been able to do.
Yeah, a ton of respect for Coach there and what he's done and how he's gotten to this position that he's in. And, you know, he was around Coach Harbaugh, who I've spent a number of years around in Philadelphia years ago. And so there's some similarities there in terms of some of the influences and who John learned from and then who I've learned from as well over the years.
All right, Coach. Safe travels to Seattle. Good luck on Sunday. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks a lot.
Sounds great. Thanks, Sal.
All right, you got it. That is Bills head coach Sean McDermott. So obviously the big news. Terrell Bernard will be ruled out for this game. He will not play. Bills middle linebacker. Huge blow for the Bills. Huge blow against a Seattle Seahawks team with Kenneth Walker running the ball with the leading quarterback leader in passing yards for the season in Geno Smith. We'll see from Seattle today if they have DK Metcalf available or not. That's going to be their big one. But they still have Tyler Lockett, Jackson Smith and Jigba. So this is a very good Seattle offense. It's an offensive line, though, the Bills can try to take advantage of. However, no Dwayne Carter in this game. Interesting. So Dwayne Carter, let me look here. I thought it was interesting that he showed up on the injury report. Let me just look at the injury report from yesterday and compare it to Wednesday as I do this year, because this is one of those deals where Dwayne Carter, he was limited on Wednesday and limited on Thursday. So he has a wrist injury. So obviously the wrist injury, I would think, is the reason that they feel that he's, you know, not able to go. But a big blow on the defensive line as well. And then Curtis Samuel, he won't play in this game. That was kind of expected after missing 2 days with the pectoral. We'll see how the Bills adjust here as far as elevations. So what does this mean? Let's talk about roster for a second, okay? Let's go the other way first. Let's go Curtis Samuel. I would expect Tyrell Shavers, KJ Hamler, one of those guys maybe to be activated. Last time, I believe, it was Tyrell Shavers who was called up. No Dwayne Carter. The Bills do have options if they want to elevate somebody. Branson Dean, last time they needed somebody, he was elevated. They still have Ilyanku at defensive tackle. And if you really want to, because Dewan Smoot can play inside and outside, which, by the way, he was not on the injury report, which is good. Kingsley Jonathan, Cameron Klein, so you have some options there as well. And then at linebacker, I guess this would mean maybe that Joe Andreessen would be activated, but because he would be your Joe Andreessen would be your second middle linebacker in this situation based on the depth chart and how things generally go. So Bernard and then Baylen Specter would start, and Joe Andreessen would be their backup. That's how it would look on paper, at least. We'll see if the Bills go that way. So, yeah, Terrell Bernard out. Big blow against the Bills for the Bills, but we'll see about DK Metcalf for the Seattle Seahawks as well. The Seahawks have two former Buffalo Bills, one on the coaching side, Leslie Frazier, who obviously knows Sean McDermott's defense pretty much inside and out. And I guarantee you he's telling and talking to Geno Smith and the offensive players about that a lot this week and the offensive staff. He can also speak from experience of going against Josh Allen every single day in practice and talk to his defense about that. So he's going to have some intel that he can share. And then there's Tyrell Dodson. He's going to bring the juice. He's going to bring the energy. I talked to a lot of Bills players about facing him, their former teammate. And they all said the same thing. We know he's going to bring the energy. That's Tyrell for you. He's going to move to will linebacker as they traded for a new middle linebacker. So he'll know some of the things that, you know, go on with the Bills defense. Bills, Seahawks, 4:05 p.m., we'll have your pregame show all day here on WGR. And, of course, the roundtable will begin at 2 p.m. I'll be on the field for that with Chris Brown and Eric Wood on the Buffalo Bills radio network. All right, let's get to week number 8 in the National Football League, which started last night. And, again, let's just talk about last night and what happened a little bit here, because the Rams kind of salvaged their season where they win over the Minnesota Vikings. Now, the Vikings were everybody's darling, right? Just a couple of weeks ago. They're 5-0, they're rolling, they're just smoking teams. Well, now they've lost 2 in a row. They scored 20 points last night, lowest of their season. They do get the Colts coming up next. Then they go to the Jags and the Titans and the Bears and the Cardinals. So they have a lot of winnable games. I wouldn't panic yet. The story here to me is the Rams putting themselves back in the mix in the NFC West, sitting at 3-4, one game behind the Seattle Seahawks, 4-3, who the Bills play, obviously, on Sunday. Offense looked really good for the Rams, by the way. Now that's a team that all of a sudden looks a lot dangerous when the Bills have to visit in early November. All right, some really big, interesting matchups at 1 o'clock in the NFL, starting with the Eagles at Bengals. Could be this is maybe the biggest game kind of in the 1 o'clock slate when it comes to two different teams and, you know, what's on the line for them. Because the Eagles, even though they're 4-2, they're still trying to figure out, and everybody wants to know who they are, what they're all about. And they're a half game behind the Washington Commanders at 5-2. But they go to the Cincinnati Bengals, and the Bengals right now are two full games behind both Pittsburgh and Baltimore in the AFC North at 3-4. Two teams that are trying to find their way. Nobody can really kind of figure them out right now. They're going to try and figure each other out. Big game there in Cincinnati Sunday at 1 o'clock. Then you have the Ravens at the Browns. The reason I think this is a big game is because you never know what you're going to get now from Jameis Winston. Yeah, sure, the Browns are 1-6. They have not been good. But the Browns are kind of the kryptonite for the Ravens over the last few years. And this is a division matchup. They know each other. It's Jameis Winston wanting to prove that he belongs still in this league as a starter and can win games. I think the Browns can give a run here. I do. But the way the Ravens are playing, it's probably too tall of a task to ask, because the Ravens are playing exceptional football, and especially on offense. Lamar Jackson looking terrific. Derrick Henry, tough to stop. Very tough. 5-2 Ravens at 1-6 Browns Sunday at 1 p.m. The Titans, they go to the Lions. Titans at 1-5. I mean, I don't know. Do we know? Is Mason Rudolph playing again? Will Levis is still out? I think that might be the case. Either way, they're going to the Lions. The Lions should smoke the Titans, right? I mean, that's the way it looks here. Lions, they're a scoring machine. Last three games, 42, 47, 31. They win at Minnesota last week in a big high-scoring affair, and now they get a Tennessee Titans team that really has some trouble scoring. We saw that last week against the Bills. I'd like for the Lions here to kind of take care of business quite early. Colts at Texans. You know, I just told you how, you know, the Browns can be the Ravens' kryptonite. Well, the Colts have actually had some success against the Texans over the last few years as well. You take a look, actually, last year, the Colts beat the Texans 31-20 early in the season, and then they played late in the season. It was only a two-point game on the final week of the season. Year before that, let's see, a one-point game, week 18. A tie. They tied Remember that 2 years ago they tied their opener, 2020. I mean, don't sleep on the Colts necessarily, but the Texans probably have too much firepower in this one coming back home to Houston. Packers are at Jaguars. Jaguars still trying to get off the mat. The Packers look really good. They have that last-second walk-off field goal last week to beat the Houston Texans. Now they go to Jacksonville, who has won two of their last three. They've scored 32 and 37, respectively, in those games. They came back from London after going 1-1 against the Bears and Patriots out there. I still would think that the Packers should take care of business here, but we know the Jags have talent, but the Packers just should have too much for the Jaguars here and probably will score a bunch of points. Cardinals at Dolphins, the return of Tua Tagovailoa. I mean, I think just simply the Dolphins on paper here should win this game, right? The return of Tua. Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle. They have not been able to do much without Tua on the field. Here are Miami's points scored this year. Starting with the game, they scored 20 in the opener. They beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. They come back late in the game. Then the Bills come to town. They lose. Tua gets hurt late, but they score 10. All right? Here's the number of points they've scored in the last 5 weeks. 10, 3, 12, 15, and 10. Whoa. They need Tua back. Look, I mean, he's not the best quarterback in the league. Far from it. But he makes that offense so much better because he's the perfect guy to run that offense. And now they get an Arizona Cardinals team that is like a yo-yo. I mean, they have rotated lose, win every other week for the last 4 weeks. And even beyond that, they right now they're sitting at 3-4. They're trying to keep pace in the NFC West as well. Big loss. They beat the Chargers last week. Remember that game? A couple controversial calls late, but 17-15, they got crushed by the Packers the week before. So, big game because the Dolphins come to Buffalo next week. The week after. So you want to see what Tua does and get it back into that offense. And you hope he stays healthy, right? You don't want to see what happened to him with the concussions. That's a 1 o'clock game. Arizona Cardinals at Miami Dolphins. Jets at Patriots. Jets have not swept the Patriots. I think since 2000, I read. It's been a long time. They should do it. I think the Jets are just going to take care of business with the Patriots. They should beat them pretty handily. If the Jets don't just smoke the Patriots, then either Drake May is really unbelievably good, or the Jets just, they are not anything. They're a shell of what we thought they'd be, and that would be more the case, I think, in this case. But they should beat the Patriots. They should beat them pretty handily, actually. I expect that. And then the Jets, if they do that, they go to 3-5, and that's why the Bills, you don't want to drop one here to Seattle. You want to keep that pace and keep that gap in the AFC East. Falcons at Buccaneers, big game, but man, the Buccaneers, they are decimated by injuries at the wide receiver spot. No Mike Evans, no Chris Godwin. Who's going to be the guy that steps up? Is it Jalen McMillan, Sterling Shepard? Falcons, big loss last week to the Seahawks after winning three in a row. They had won three straight division games. By the way, these two teams just played 3 weeks ago, and the Falcons won 36-30. I think with all the injuries to the Buccaneers, I'd take the Falcons here, but they're also a really hot and cold team. Saints are at the Chargers. Saints are getting a little bit healthier again. Who are the Chargers? They're kind of up and down every week. How do they want to play? Do they have an identity? I'm not sure. Why do you have Justin Herbert and you don't want him to throw the ball? I have no idea. But Chargers, after losing last week to 17-15 to the Cardinals, they take on a Saints team that started so hot but has since lost 5 in a row. 2-0 to start the year, 5 in a row after that. I mean, Chargers at home, probably a Chargers win, but don't discount the Saints. Panthers at Broncos. This is Crush City, right? I mean, what is Bryce Young going to do against the Broncos defense? The answer is nothing. I'd be stunned if the Panthers score more than 10 points in this game. I mean, maybe they get a backdoor TD late, you know, whatever. But I think the Broncos, not that the Broncos are some juggernaut with their offense, but their defense is really good, and the Panthers' offense stinks. It's just a horrible matchup for the Panthers. Chiefs at Raiders. Yeah, the Raiders give the Chiefs a lot of problems. They beat them last year. We know that. But the Chiefs are 6-0. They're finding ways to win. And they'll figure it out in this one. They'll beat the Raiders. I'd be surprised if the Raiders won this game. But, I mean, the Raiders, they lost last week to the Rams by 5. And then before that, getting crushed. 32-13. 34-18. They did win a couple big games early in the year, including against the Baltimore Ravens, of course. But I'm not getting my hopes up here for the Raiders to beat the Chiefs. Bears at Commanders. Looks like Jaden Daniels. I don't think he's going to play. I don't know. No official word on that yet. Bears 4-2. Commanders, who would have thought this game would be a matchup of two teams combined for 9-4? Wouldn't thought that. Should be a fun game. That's a 4:25 p.m. start. Your night game, Sunday night, is the Cowboys and the 49ers. That is a That is the Sunday night football game. Man, you got the Bears and Commanders combining for 9-4, and you got the Cowboys and 49ers combining for 6-7. Both these teams looking to salvage their season where they are right now. I think the 49ers win this game because I think the Cowboys are just bad. Just bad. Now, they did have a week to prepare. They had their bye week, and the 49ers are dealing with some injuries, obviously, as we know. Wide receiver spot. I think the 49ers win this game, but renewal of a very, very old, great rivalry in that one, by the way. All right, Monday night, Giants at Steelers. We'll talk about that on the Monday Extra Points Show. In the meantime, we'll take a timeout here. Our guy, Patrick Hammer, is going to join me next up. We're going to talk about the Seattle weather. Should be interesting. It's going to be wet. How wet? He'll let us know. But here in Buffalo, it's going to be fantastic this weekend and into next week. I'll let the meteorologist, Patrick Hammer, tell you all about it. But right now, it's time for a break. We'll be back in a snap, brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
All right, we have a couple updates here from Bills head coach Sean McDermott, who's also doing his weekly media session, Friday media session with others in the media after he appeared here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Just a little more expansion on what he told us here. Dwayne Carter, the rookie defensive tackle, has a wrist injury and will need surgery, and he's going to be out multiple weeks. This coming from Sean McDermott just a little while ago. So Sean McDermott says that Dwayne Carter, the Bills rookie defensive tackle, will need surgery. He's out multiple weeks. That is a tough, tough blow to a really nice rookie who's played really well lately. Also, Terrell Bernard being out is because of the ankle. It's not because of him having the personal absence that, you know, he's also missed with this week. He is with the team today, but he's not going to play in the game on Sunday due to the ankle injury. Bills at Seahawks on Sunday. To me, it's looking like kind of typical Seattle weather that you think about this time of year. But let's ask Patrick Hammer, who joins me now on the Western Hotline.
Break it down. Stop. Have a time.
So I got to be honest, Pat, like you texted me last night. You're like, hey, there's a little bit more goes into it in Seattle, not just this rain you're going to see. And I'm like, what are we talking about here? You know, why do you gotta put me in the fear bunker? You know, I mean, that's what we got. That's what we got going on. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Here's the deal. There's more than meets the eye with Seattle weather. So what I was trying to suggest to you that it's actually probably going to be a little bit better than what you would expect, despite, you know, the forecast calls for rain. And the entire region of Western Washington is going to get a couple of days of heavy rain. And of all of the NFL games, Sunday, Monday, the worst weather, of course, will be in Seattle. So the Bills are going to play in the worst NFL weather this Sunday. However, there is this phenomenon that takes place there where when storms kind of blow through and there's still rain going on, the mountains to the west of Seattle, it's the Olympic Mountain Range, they go really high. They tend to block a lot of the rain into the city when the wind turns from southwest to west. And what I'm saying is that it's called a rain shadow. It happens there all the time. So even though the entire region may be getting rain, in Seattle and in downtown and by the stadium, it may be, in fact, dry despite the real rainy forecast, or at least the rain turns to really light stuff, light showers, and I think that's going to be the case tomorrow. It is going to be pouring in the morning, but by kickoff there, local time, was it 1:10?
It's 1:05 p.m. their time, 4:05 p.m. And you mean Sunday. You said tomorrow. I just want to make sure.
I'm sorry.
Okay, yeah, just want to make sure.
Sorry. So the forecast is a wet one for Sunday, but I think for kickoff and through the game, could there be some rain showers? Yeah, but it's not going to be heavy, and I do think that there'll be some dry weather in there as well. It will be breezy. Have you been to that stadium before, Sal? I think you have.
Yeah,
right?
2016, it was a night game. It was beautiful weather, actually.
Yeah, okay. As you know, they've got the openings north-south, and with a southwest wind, it's not a direct wind right into the stadium, but it will take a bend into it and swirl around a little bit. Stadium is pretty well protected from the weather, actually. But there will be a breeze and it will be damp. But I think the heaviest rain will be moving through in the morning and really ease off by kickoff.
I'm looking at it now. In that game that was played on November 7th of 2016 at night, at kickoff it was 61 degrees and 4 mile-an-hour winds. Not bad.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that was nice.
There's a lot of, real quick, just about Seattle weather, or Western Washington weather, which makes it so bizarre. Seattle gets rain, but they don't get as much as you think. And there are areas, because of those Olympic Mountains, there's an area. It's a town called Squim, Washington, which is about 40 miles from Seattle, that gets less rainfall than Los Angeles and as many sunny days as Phoenix, Arizona. Think about that. Seattle, cloudy, damp, 40 miles away because of those mountains and the effects that it has there, as sunny as Phoenix. So the mountains really can make for wacky conditions in the Puget Sound area.
Yeah, talking with people in Seattle, other guys covering the Seahawks, the way it was described to me is it's like this misty, fine rain that you kind of don't even notice a little bit. Like you don't need an umbrella, anything like that. Sure, like it's just like you might be like, oh yeah, it's coming, it's there, right? But not something that really gets noticeable.
It's just not impactful, Whereas areas to the north and the south and up in the mountains, it can be it can rain hard in Seattle, but most of it, especially in the situation we're going to have on Sunday, it's just kind of nuisance. Most of it, and it's light, and you're right. Sometimes you just don't even notice it.
All right. Well, while that's happening in Seattle, what's happening here in Buffalo this weekend?
So not as elite as it was last weekend, but today and tomorrow, we'll have a few spotty showers this afternoon. Not a big deal. Friday night lights should be okay. Tomorrow, it might start off okay, but there are a couple of spotty showers around, especially in the afternoon. I don't cancel your plans because of it, but you can't rule out a few spotty showers. Sunday looks spectacular, mostly sunny and temperatures in the 50s. Now, this is what's going to be interesting. Next week, we're right back into the 70s. It's going to be a windy week, but we are on tap for possibly the warmest Halloween on record.
Wow.
We're forecasting 73.
Wow.
The record high for Halloween is 73, set back in 1971. So unlike last year when it snowed, this year it's going to be warm. It won't be cold. Having said that, there could be some rain showers around, which, I'd rather have the cold than the rain. But we can't rule out a chance of showers on Halloween, but it's certainly going to be warm.
I remember it snowing last year. And it wasn't that bad. It was a little light snow. No. It was a little cold. It was colder, obviously. That was totally fine. A few years before that, maybe 2 years before that, it was just this total downpour storm. Remember that one?
And yes, and it was sideways wind. I mean,
yeah.
it was crazy. I mean, it was a, you know, let's hit one or two houses on the trick-or-treat path and we're done. You know, it was wild. So there's a lot of variety on Halloween around here. I mean, this is the time, you know, it's kind of the entrance to all possibilities weather-wise around here. But this one, again, just as warm as it's been lately, it's not surprising that it's going to be as warm as it can get next Thursday on Halloween.
Yeah, no doubt. Pat Hammer here on the Wester Hotline. I mean, I know that I'm putting you on the spot here. I do this sometimes. World Series. I hate the fact that the World Series is played as late as it is because you get these cities, you know, in the East where it's cold. I mean, I remember when in 2001, when the Yankees played the Diamondbacks, Jeter hits a home run to tie the game late in the game, and I remember the call was Mr. November because literally it had turned into November. It was Halloween night and turned into November. I mean, it's just, to me, a little bit ridiculous, and I think the season goes too long. That being said, they're in L.A. tonight and tomorrow. Then they come back to Yankee Stadium early next week. So does this weather that you're talking about hold for that, too, and we'll have good baseball weather?
Good baseball weather, no doubt,
okay,
for the New York portion. Yeah, you usually don't need to really worry about Chavez Ravine in,
right,
Los Angeles for weather, you know, in November. But for next week, for the games in New York, I think it looks fine. It might be breezy. That's okay. But it will be dry. Any rain threat for New York City is possibly the very end of next week. But it's not looking too bad. And by the way, peeking ahead to the Dolphins game here next Sunday, it also looks warm. So it could be another warm Sunday afternoon. I can't rule out showers that day, but no cold. You know, it's a little cool now, but no late fall cold is on tap for the next 7 to 10 days. So we're looking pretty good.
All right, Pat. And there was one other thing I was going to ask you. Oh, yeah, World Series. Are you who are you rooting for in this one?
Okay, so, you know, growing up, you know, I grew up in San Francisco, so I would never like the Dodgers. I was always a Giants fan. However, I just remember the last Yankees Dodgers World Series, right? And wasn't that 81?
Yes,
anyway,
yes.
I have vivid memories of that Dodgers team with Fernando Valenzuela, who unfortunately just passed. We were just talking about him in the studio the other day, and then we come to find out the next day he passed. Ron Say, Davey Lopes, Steve Garvey, you know, I don't know. I kind of had an affinity for that era of Dodgers baseball. I can't say my passion goes either way, but yeah, I'm gonna hold for the Yankees. The Dodgers just tick me off.
All right, man. Well, you know I am too. It should be fun. I'm just glad I didn't want to play the Mets because I couldn't stomach the thought of losing to the Mets in the World Series if that had happened.
I hear you.
I mean, I don't want to lose to the Dodgers, believe me, but at least it's a little bit more like, you know, it's not as shameful for us Yankee fans. You know what I mean?
Has anybody checked on Howard Simon? I know he was devastated about the Mets. Has anybody, you know, welfare check, make sure he's okay?
I don't know. I think he is. I think he did. I think he did pick the Bills this week, so I think we're all good on that front.
We're all good. Okay. Good.
All right. Hey, buddy. Thanks a lot. Enjoy the weekend. Thanks a lot for everything, and we'll talk next Friday. And, hey, we got a run of Sunday games here, which is good. So we'll talk on Fridays.
Love that. Okay. Talk
all right,
buddy.
Thank you. You too. That is Patrick Hammer on the Wester Hotline, and of course, giving us the weather in Seattle coming up. I mean, look, I'm just reading some of the comments. Sean McDermott ruled out Terrell Bernard, and I see people online, at Sal Sports, by the way, on social, talking about his availability as, you know, his career is being an issue. I just look, Terrell Bernard missed one game his rookie year, and he played every game last year until he got hurt in the playoff game. And then, of course, he got hurt this year, but I don't think availability has been an issue for Terrell Bernard. He's been on the field, and he didn't start every game his rookie year, of course, only one game. He didn't really get in a lot of games, to be quite honest with you. And he played every game last year after Matt Milano went out until it got to the playoffs, and he got hurt in that first playoff game. And then he had to miss the second playoff game. So one game missed there. Looking here, he did miss playoff game against the Bengals, it looks like, too. So looking at the overall, I don't think availability has been an issue. He is a little bit smaller than most middle linebackers. I understand that, and I understand why people can kind of get there, but not much you can do when you get stepped on your ankle and it turns, right? I mean, just that happens. It's part of football. I always say it. Yeah, they have some injuries. It's just every team has injuries. Go look at every injury report. Chris Guy's declared out for every team. The Bills have three this week.
And hopefully they're getting healthier with Matt Milano. It's good to hear that from Sean McDermott, that they are still hoping to get him back at some point. So we'll keep you updated on that. But in the meantime, no Terrell Bernard, no Curtis Samuel, and no Dwayne Carter, who, in case you missed it, Sean McDermott says wrist surgery. He'll be out multiple weeks. Injured reserve is an option for Dwayne Carter. That's your Barnes Firm injury report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. We'll take a final timeout. We'll come back here. We'll get you to Sabres Live, and then One Bills Live after that, but a little bit more to go here on a Friday, Football Friday, on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
I've got some family in town for a birthday party and things like that. So not mine.
Cool birthday party? Like, what are you doing? Yeah, going to some cool place?
My girlfriend's nephew's first birthday.
Oh, all right. Yeah. First birthday.
On Sunday, by the way. So we're doing the party and then watching the game.
Okay, so was this planned out with the game and the party?
It's
and
a football
all that.
Theme party, too.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Like, yeah, it's everything. It's going to be
great. That's not bad. You could do that.
Oh, yeah, no, it's going to be good. Like, the party's going to be over and then the game gets on. So it's going to be great. Nice, perfect timing.
I will tell you, I still remember feeling bad, but this happened when I was probably, I would have been probably 85, 86, I guess this would be somewhere in there. So I would have been 12, maybe 13, somewhere in there. My friend had a 12th birthday party, I guess it'd be. And he planned it on a Sunday at a rolling rink, and the roller rink, and the Bills, even though they were bad, they were playing the Patriots, and I basically fibbed and said I was sick and couldn't come.
I mean, for a Patriots game, like a Bills-Patriots game.
No, this was 1985 when the Bills sucked and the Patriots were not. The Patriots, I think, went to the Super Bowl that year. But
oh, never mind.
I mean, this is not Tom Brady era, okay?
Oh, well, I know that. I'm just saying, though, like, it's still like it's that rivalry, that hatred that's always there.
Yeah, I know, but I feel bad.
Yeah.
I'm like, why is he scheduling a birthday party? Well, that kid, he grew up, he was a Cowboys fan. When I was a kid, like, you had Steelers fans, Cowboys fans, the Bills, like, that was passed down from the 70s dads and the 60s dads and generations. So most of my friends were Bills fans, but some were fans of other teams. So this particular friend, he was a Cowboys fan, and he scheduled his birthday party at a local roller rink, and the Patriots, they were playing the Bills and the Patriots, and I'm like, I don't really want to go. I want to stay home and watch the Bills game. And I'm sure the Bills probably lost. I have no idea. But and the Bills stunk. They went 2-14 two straight years those years. Didn't matter. That's when you know you're a real fan, when you're a kid, right?
But it's also, it's a football Sunday. I guess if you're a kid.
It was a kid. I was 12.
Okay.
Going to my friend's birthday party.
Did you get him a good gift at least, probably?
I have no idea. I did not remember. I think I said, I'll bring your gift on Monday to school. I mean, probably never did. I kept it myself, knowing me. I'm a horrible person. Horrible. And then I will tell you, like, the big one, though, I will tell you like this, is when we were living in Florida, we had friends who were really, really big, like huge Florida Gators fans and boosters. Like, they donated money to the school and program. But yet, the girl, she got married on a fall Saturday. And we're all like, what? And the family was even like, why did you do this? And it happened to be Florida playing Auburn that day during the wedding. And everybody was like, come on. Like, what? It was this huge wedding at this really nice country club. And we go to the wedding. And I mean, everybody knows. Like, I'm like, all right, I'm not a Florida Auburn fan, but I'm a college football fan. But the people at the wedding, the family members were mad. And there was this little side room, and people were sneaking off to watch the game instead of being on the dance floor. And the bride came in. She saw it. The bride came into the room and saw everybody and got really mad. And I'm in there, and I kind of, like, scrouched down in my chair, like, don't see me. I'm not here. But she was mad at, like, her family members that were there.
That's kind of your own fault, though. I mean, if you schedule,
I know.
Family history.
You could say, well, they can only get the venue. Well, then get another venue. It's a Saturday in the fall. You're a big Florida Gators fan, right?
Right.
Anyway, that happened.
Or just pick a different day.
Listen to the Bills game on WGR, of course, and along the Buffalo Bills radio network on Sunday, 4:05 p.m. kickoff. We'll have all day, all morning, all afternoon pregame coverage, postgame coverage. I'll be on with the roundtable at 2 p.m. with Eric and Chris. Sabres Live up next. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.